been a primary author of two of the largest tax cuts in the history of our state.
Let the eagle
soar. Son, go outside and dust yourself off. And when you feel good again, come back in and talk to me. We know what they would have done because we know what they did.
Hero. I've been there. Hero.
We are going to fight for Missouri values. We are going to defend life. And we are going to protect our constitutional rights.
What I am trying to do to simply make tomorrow just a little bit better than today.
This is Rachel Dunn of the Missouri Times, back again with Becky Lohman for another episode of the Hashtag Millage podcast, sponsored by the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce. It's been a crazy week going into Thanksgiving. I thought it was going to slow down because of the holidays. I was wrong. So first things first, we have the top three stories of the last week to talk with today's guest, Tommy Robbins. Welcome to the Hashtag Millage podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I have a candid question. Do you prefer to go by Tommy or Tom?
Lots of people ask me that. I have no preference whatsoever. My mother calls me Tommy. Everybody I grew up with calls me Tommy.
I'm going to go with Mrs. Robbins and go with Tommy then.
Yeah,
but you spell it.
T-O-M-M-Y.
Oh, I thought it was T-H-O-M-M-I-E.
No.
Where did I make that?
That is an exotic spelling. No. I think in business settings, I introduce myself as Tom because I found that older guys are like, why do you still go by Tom? They give me a funny look. So I just try to make people comfortable.
If Danny Piper's listening, he's going to take great offense to that. But I've never heard him introduce himself as Dan, but maybe he should start.
No. Not at all. I always took solace in him, Danny. So.
Right, if it's good enough for Danny Piper,
it's definitely good enough for me.
So the three of the biggest stories, and definitely not limited at all, there's been a ton of massive important stories over the last week, but one of the big ones was on Friday. The Missouri Housing Development Commission voted on a draft, it's not finalized, to suspend tax credits for housing in 2019. That's a big deal. I went to that hearing. It was packed. And you know, I always think it's funny whenever a bunch of men in suits go to a nice hotel and reserve their conference room to vote on low income housing. Anyway, so that's a big deal. A lot of people very upset.
So the room for the meeting, who is filled there? I mean, I have to imagine it's a mix of both, but a lot of extreme versions of support, right? You probably have a lot of your disabled community, the developers. So, but then do you have folks that are there that are enraged citizens on tax credits?
I will say those people were not there. And if they were, I don't know where they were.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people who live in LIHTC developments were there. And they were ready to talk to press all over afterwards. And I was really impressed at how knowledgeable they were, that their housing was fully in existence because of LIHTC or because of the historic tax credit. And they were all seriously afraid, not only for themselves, but for their friends, for their sons, for other disabled people that they know, that they're not going to be able to find affordable housing anymore. One woman told me that she gets $1,040 a month, and that's what she lives on. And her apartment rent is $400 a month. She's like, I don't know where else I would go. Mm-hmm. It's the only thing I can afford. So these people were truly scared. They were very well educated.
I think I saw Senator Nasheed perhaps say something pretty compelling that said, when it comes to taking care of our disabled and low income, is ROI shouldn't be the topic of conversation, right? Certainly, let's discuss that. But at the end of the day, these are people, right? This isn't finance.
And return on investment is something interesting. The governor is saying that for every dollar that Missouri expends on these tax credits, we only get 42 or 58 cents back, something like that. Those numbers are based on a RIMI model that I wrote an article about last week. I would encourage you to read it because it's very long and I don't want to talk about it for the rest of the podcast.
You
don't But they're based on a model that doesn't necessarily assess the value of that tax credit the way Missouri would, or even the way that Senator Nasheed did whenever she spoke on Friday. Because she talked about whenever low-income people are able to find nice housing in nice areas, you can't monetize that. There isn't literally a value put on that. But crime goes down. Education goes up. It increases the percentage of the kids graduating from college. That goes up. Or graduating from high school. And so it's kind of hard to monetize value of life in general.
Right. I think a lot of these things look good on paper, and but whenever we see the practical application of them, like the poor people, the seniors, the veterans, where are they going to live? Yeah. So while most people are for some level of tax reform, I'm disappointed that they didn't take a more measured approach and maybe prune the historics as less necessary than the LIHTC, which seems to be government doing what government should do, which is helping those who have difficulties helping themselves.
And, you know, one last point of that. Whenever the government tried to do housing itself, we had developments like Pruitt-Igoe that failed miserably. They were cesspools of crime and drugs, and it didn't go well. Pruitt-Igoe in St. Louis ended up being razed to the ground because it was so dangerous. It was a sink in St. Louis. But now you've got, I don't know if you've ever visited any of these LIHTC developments. There's one here in Jefferson City, and it's really nice. And it's nice that people are able to get a two-bedroom apartment for them and their kids for $400 a month, know their kids are in a safe area, know that they're in a clean area. And it'd be a shame for that to go away in Missouri, because obviously Missouri is not going to build developments themselves, but there's going to be a need for housing no matter what.
I think possibly this is a shot across the bow, and that in the final draft there will be something a little more nuanced.
Definitely. So next thing, tax reform. The House of Representatives in D.C., not here in Missouri, obviously, just passed a version of Trump's tax plan last Thursday, I believe. And we had Congressman Lukemeyer, who represents this area, on This Week in Missouri Politics on Sunday. I recommend you go and watch it. He gave a great interview. Also, Treasurer Schmidt went to D.C. to work on the tax reform thing. A lot of Republicans are behind it. Seems like a good idea. I have not read into it. I know, Tommy, you follow national issues a little bit closer than I do.
I do. I'm not a tax expert, but...
On this podcast, you are.
Today I am. I wish that the corporate tax break was extended to pass-through income, like that money which is earned through an LLC. I think it would have broader base effect. There are certain parts of, let's say, southeast West Butler County. I don't know that anybody in West Butler County has a corporation that's going to benefit from this, but I know that there are plenty who have like an LLC that would. It would just broaden the base of people it helps.
I will say I'm excited to see what the Senate comes up with, and of course, like, then I'll read into a little bit more. Like, as we know here in Missouri, just because the one chamber has a version doesn't mean it's going to change completely different colors by the end of the day. So I'm looking forward to following it more and seeing if maybe we have some tax reform.
Well, and I've heard, I think I brought this up on the last podcast, but Senator Igel's tax reform bill, certainly everyone acknowledges that any comprehensive reform bill has obstacles just by their very nature. But hearing a lot of folks give major kudos to him on those efforts, walking the walk and talking the talk, talking about how we need comprehensive tax reform, talking about tax breaks for Missourians, and then taking on such a cumbersome issue with all of these different interests and coming up with something that everyone is tipping their hat to him on. And I think that's very impressive. And I wonder what the implications of a national reform bill would be to that legislation.
Speaking of Senator Igel, we are here with Tommy Robbins. You have a stake in transportation, and that's the third story I'd like to talk about. Because last week, the 21st Century Transportation Task Force met again. Senator Igel is on that committee. And one of the things that Senator Igel is starting to talk about is raising the gas tax as part of his comprehensive tax plan. But whenever it comes to you, Tommy, and your clients, and as you look forward at transportation, of course, Thanksgiving, I mean, that's the best way to figure out how good Missouri roads are, is driving all over them for the holidays. What are you seeing with transportation?
So, I represent Scenic Missouri, and they're kind of a visionary group. They've been around for a little while, and they put out an idea or a plan that would construct a parallel highway to I-70, which would be cars only, and we're not married to any particular funding structure, but it would seem to make sense that maybe a toll road there, because it would be optional. I mean, you could still take I-70. So the combination of rehabbing I-70 in its present footprint versus the alternative plan, which would be expanding the footprint to three lanes. So new, more scenic route, rehab I-70, that combined would be, we believe, less expensive or just about the same as redoing I-70 and making it wider. Not even sure if they can make it wider in certain parts.
That's true. So a fun fact about me that I'm sure everyone's curious about. I was one of those serial major changes whenever I was in college. And for three semesters, I was an urban planning major. And urban planners and transportation visionaries have so many great ideas. And so I was looking at the Scenic Missouri proposal. And there are seriously spots where they have these great illustrations where you really see the best of Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, whenever you go down I-70, like Becky does 12 times a day.
I did today.
There's did more today. Billboards.
You only get a ticket like 105 times.
That's impressive, actually.
Yeah.
There's more billboards than any stretch of any road in the United States on I-70. So that's not pretty.
It's not aesthetically pleasing.
No. I remember before Kathy Griffin got a little cuckoo, I saw her at Mizzou, and she was like, so this is my first time in Missouri, was really interested by the billboards because it was like, don't get an abortion, porn store,
guns,
and then there's something like stop sex trafficking.
Yeah, it's like black market arms, abortion, Jesus will save your life. Like, I think it's fun. It's an eyesore, but it's entertaining.
It's kind of a fun, like, culture thing. And, you know, something I never thought about until I had a stepson who's now reading is whenever we go on I-70 to, like, my family's house in Kansas City, he's like, hey, Rachel, what's sex trafficking?
Fun family combos.
Yeah.
Well, and that's how I benchmark how much more time I have on my trip. I'm like, oh, I just drove by the Black Market Arms billboard. I've got about 45 minutes left in my drive.
So that's something that maybe this alternative route would create.
Yeah.
And, you know, I-70 in Kansas is a toll road. It's not that far-fetched of a concept. So we
and
do
those
have,
who don't want to pay the toll can go on
the
I-70 and mingle with the absolutely. Yeah, it's a great turn of phrase. But there would be less traffic on I-70, and so it would sustain itself for a longer period of time.
And there were some other visuals that showed similar, like, parkways, and I think there's one in New York.
They're all over the place.
Where it was just pretty.
Yeah.
And it looks like a parkway, except you're going 70 miles per hour.
And the interesting thing is upstate New York has a...
Or more, if you're Becky, apparently.
Upstate New York 90. Is very similarly situated in terms of topography, Missouri, so...
So, those three stories worth reading. If you want to read more about what's going on in Missouri politics, obviously you should go to the MissouriTimes.com that I just redid this morning. We have a fun segment for you, a very short fun segment, because Thursday is obviously Thanksgiving. This is one of our first, like, holiday week podcasts I think we have ever done. So, we have come up with five things everyone in Moleg should buy on Black Friday. And the first thing, Becky walked in with these in her ears, so the Apple AirBuds.
That's the best purchase I made in over a year. It's like growing a second hand. Or a third hand, because you already have two. you know, when everybody that's listening to this podcast is on their phone all the time, and holding it up to your ear or even having to hold your phone while you have your earpods connected to it is overly cumbersome for me, to be quite honest. And so the earpods, the wireless earpods, I think that you should get those for the person you love most in your life that is in politics.
Way to go.
Or otherwise.
So the next thing, this is a recurring theme of the last few podcasts. It's good hair products. And something we did not talk about off air that I would like to talk about is we've had Joe Lakin on the podcast. We've had Wes Sutton. And they both think they have the best hair. They kind of have the same hair, to be honest. And, like, you...
They have great hair. I want to get that on the
And if you miss it, we're here with Tommy Robbins. He has great hair. Ryan Grace also has great hair. Their names really
No.
Okay, no. Becky says no.
Brian doesn't get any credit on this podcast.
Grace, I love your hair.
Yeah, I was like, Brian, I know you're listening. I like your hair as well. Hair is a big deal here in
Sam Wiles. I have to put Sam Wiles' hair on there, too.
I have to tout the people that's on my paychecks, Danny Piper and Greg Porter. Great hair.
Alex Eaton. Alex Eaton, his is iconic.
Yeah, there is. That's quite a caucus we've got.
Yeah.
So if you don't have good hair products, I encourage you to buy one. Ulta has a sale on Friday, probably. I unsubscribe from their email for many reasons. But I will say, the other night, so my kid's 7. He got out of the shower. I let him try one of my new hair products. Well, not even new. Like, I just remembered to buy it again. And I did his hair like Danny Piper. I sent Becky a picture.
It was
looked
legit.
Very grown up. If you have a 7-year-old who really needs to redo his look, I recommend things. I recommend a comb and some oil. Third thing you should consider buying for anyone in your hashtag Millig life is a Mophie.
Yeah, Mophie. Yeah, I mean, Tommy, do you use a Mophie?
I don't. I don't know. I'm not cool enough to need that much phone power.
Maybe your phone dying is a secret blessing at times, right?
Becky, this was your suggestion. What is a Mophie?
So a Mophie is a charger that is built into your phone case. There's certainly the Apple version, but I don't prefer that because the Mophie lets you turn it on and off. And so the Apple charger will charge your phone no matter what if it's on. And I don't think that's an efficient way of doing things. The Mophie lets you, your phone can totally die, and then you can click the charger on, and then it'll charge it back up. It is, I can't get through a day at the Capitol without my phone dying.
Yeah.
If I don't have a Mophie. So
that's a great idea. Because I know for sure, like, there's about 4 or 5 offices throughout the building. If my phone's getting low, I know they have a charger ready and waiting for me.
Mm-hmm. And another benefit of the Mophie is similar to the Apple is that you can take it off and then charge the Mophie so that your phone isn't charged to a wall, right? You can separate them, charge the Mophie, and then come pick it back up. It's brilliant.
That sounds like a great idea.
It's great.
And the last thing is a shameless plug. And no, we're not having a sale, but you should obviously buy an ad in the Missouri Times Magazine. It's coming out in January, on January 30th, at the Missourian of the Year Award party. It'll be at the Mill Bottom. Everyone should put it on their calendar. Anyway, it's going to be a big addition for the Missouri Times 5th anniversary. Some people are amazed we've been around for 5 years. I don't know if they mean that, oh my gosh, you've been around for 5 years, in a positive or negative way. But alas, we have been around for 5 years, and we're going to have a big party and start giving out the Missourian of the Year Award. Would you like to know who's getting the award this year?
Yes.
Is it Becky?
It is not.
Is this the announcement? I'll graciously accept.
I've decided to announce this. He's going to be on the cover of the magazine. He is one of the most successful businessmen in the state of Missouri for the year of 2017. It is Johnny Morris from Branson, the owner of Bass Pro, and now Cabela's. Yeah. Anyway, he's done a lot for the state. Really excited to have him out and put him on the cover of the magazine. So, Tommy, let's talk about what you're working on. First, you and yours are throwing your weight behind one of the medical marijuana IPs, and that's obviously an issue you've been working on. What is it? What can we expect to see from it?
So we are ramping up our fundraising. I believe we're going to start signature collection on December 1st, and because we're doing a statutory one, and Becky's part of this too, we have to collect 40% fewer signatures, so it's 40% cheaper. But the most important thing is that in terms of any new law or policy, there are going to be problems. And this, unlike the others, allows the legislature to fix those problems. If you want to do anything that's...
Wait, hold on. So the others are constitutional.
The other two are constitutional. And so I'm not here to bash the others because really, ultimately, we just want medical marijuana to be legal. But we believe our regulatory system is one that's been proven all across the United States. We think that the others have an unproven regulatory system and would result in what's going on in, like, example, Florida, where they've passed it, but it's not a functional system yet. And so we don't want to go to all this time and expense, and then it's legal on the books, but there's no way to get the medical marijuana to the needy patients.
Now, I don't know if you can answer this, but I'm presuming you can. If you could compare this IP to another state's medical marijuana framework.
So we use Matt Cook, who has done has implemented medical marijuana in 23 of the 29 states. And so,
wow. something of an expert.
Yes. Pick one.
Yeah.
So.
I've heard a lot of good things about, like, Arizona's plan. Apparently, a lot of elderly people are moving to Arizona just because their system works for them.
Right. So, our system provides for basically a single license to both to grow it, to dispense it, to manufacture it. So, from a regulatory perspective, you're tracking a single license versus the others, which have the respective licenses available. But you can just apply to be a dispenser or just a grower. But that leads to regulatory issues, to say the least.
Interesting. So, speaking of constitutional amendments and functional systems, something we want to talk about was campaign finance.
Yeah.
So, a couple years ago, I guess it's officially been a couple years ago. We've seen it for a year now. Amendment 2 is on the books, and we're having some campaign finance troubles. It seems to be developing a lot. What do you think the state of campaign finance is in Missouri?
I think that campaign finance advocates are well-intentioned, but I think ultimately what happens is that money gets pushed into the dark. So what happened before November 8th of last year was a corporation could give to a candidate, and they could give as much as they wanted. And the upside of that is Joe Public could see who contributed and how much.
Right.
Now, a corporation has to give to a political action committee, an independent expenditure committee. And so it's a much more circuitous route to figure out who's giving to whom and how much, because it's all just getting tossed into PACs, which then distributes to candidates. So it's pushed money into the dark.
I think it's kind of funny. Like, I don't think the authors of what's on the books today thought this was going to create that. I don't think they intended for that to happen.
No, they're well intentioned.
It's kind of been like a job creation bill for campaign consultants.
It is.
And they're
and
doing
lawyers.
Great. Yeah, absolutely. They're all doing great.
Well, and I have to say, I do believe that they were well intentioned, but I also think that everybody was fairly warned about what the consequences of that would be. I think that was always the forefront of the conversation: is this is going to be the result? You're well intentioned, and we're grateful for that, but this is just the reality, and then that's come to pass. And so, I don't know what happens next with campaign finance.
I think it's settled out a little bit in terms of we just know that corporations have to give to PACs now. And the only thing that's outstanding is the Court of Appeals are contemplating whether PAC-to-PAC transfers are permissible, and as of right now, they are until the court says otherwise.
I think it's kind of interesting. Like, it seems like PAC-to-PAC has always been a question. It's kind of funny.
So candidates, though, I want to make it, candidates can't give to other candidates, nor can they give to a PAC. That's a one-way street. So that's the other. Previous to this, candidates could give to other candidates. That's how they showed support.
You were just talking about statutory versus constitutional. Can the legislature do anything with campaign finance with this being on the...
It's a good question. I'll just answer it generally, which is the Constitution sets out a broad framework which regulations and statutes are supposed to fill in. So the legislature could pass a law, but if somebody decided to sue about it, the court would have to decide whether that statute or regulation was contrary to the constitutional provision. So that's the general, it's sort of a clumsy answer is yes and no. If they were to pass a law that was consistent and just sort of better defined the constitutional provision, then that's okay. But anything contrary is not.
So speaking of the courts, we had an interesting conversation with Chuck Hatfield a few weeks ago. And we were talking about how there are the different medical marijuana initiatives. If all of them were to pass, because most people go in there and be like, oh, yes, 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 I support medical marijuana, with the average voter, at least, Joe Public. If those all were to pass, he was talking about how it would be up to the courts to decide what stands and what doesn't.
So that is also true. So the general precept of Constitution, statute, regulation, in that hierarchy. But there's case law out there that's pretty clear that says that the court will bend over backwards to try to harmonize the provisions of everything that the public passed. So to the extent that they can harmonize ours with the other two, they'll do it. And they'll only strike things from the statute that are directly in conflict with the overarching constitutional provision.
I think, and is it like legislation when you go to a conference committee, they can't go beyond the scope of those ballot initiatives, they can only stay underneath it?
The whole idea of the court is that they don't make new law, they just mm-hmm. interpret the mm-hmm. law. So yes, I mean, that's the hope, that they're not making new law.
I find that very interesting, because I mean, at the end of the day, people went in there and this is what they voted for. And even though that's what they voted for, that's not necessarily what's going to end up if all of them pass.
Yeah, I think it's unlikely that they all make it to the ballot. And this is why, because the constitutional provision, like I said, it's almost twice as expensive to do it. And there's a finite pool of money out there that's willing to contribute to the initiative petition process. There is a whole host of people out there that'll jump in once it's legal. But there isn't a direct ROI, as I think you said earlier, which is, I found out, return on investment. there isn't a direct return in investing in the initiative petition process, but we need people to fund it in order to get there. So, but there are only so many people that are willing to do that.
You know, the other day, Ben and I were talking about how many IPs are out there. Because that's something we like to give coverage to. And someone told me it's we currently have the most amount of IPs there's been in a year. There's currently 139, I believe, approved for circulation. And I could be wrong. I could have worded any of that wrong. But I know the 139 IPs exist. And that's a lot. Apparently, it's a record. In case you're just tuning in, we are here with Tommy Robbins. We're on the hashtag Middle Edge podcast, sponsored by the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce. And before we get to the five questions with Becky, the last thing I want to talk to you about, or with you, not really to you, it's not my subject, but you're involved in animal welfare legislation.
I am.
Which is kind of refreshing. So Becky and I both have dogs.
We like our dogs. My favorite topic is dogs.
I'm a dog lover. Yes. Animal lover, but especially dogs.
I have a funny, I need to know what your input is on this. So I have a new situation. Three doors up. Neighbor has a puppy. Looks just like my dog, except about a tenth the size. And we have a fire hydrant in my front yard. They walked the puppy down, and the puppy decided to pee on our fire hydrant, and then she went back up to her house. So obviously, being the good neighbors we are, we took our two giant dogs and walked them up to her yard to pee in her yard. Just want to assert dominance there. So, how does your client stand on that?
We are for using the outdoors as a restroom for dogs, and where they do it is better than inside. That's our only position there.
So, who is your client? What are you hoping for next year?
So, Missouri Alliance for Animal Legislation. My boss there is Bob Baker, and he's a gem of a guy. They are my oldest and my favorite client, I have to say. They're the best. So, we're working on, for example, the legislature, some interests like to try to pass legislation that would deregulate CAFOs, which are concentrated animal feeding operations, where they squeeze the animals in really tight. And we are not some fringe group that believes that animals should be above people, but we just think that God put animals on the planet, for our use, but also for us to take care of them. And so it's our job to make sure that their welfare, that they're, that they're just taken care of. That's all.
I think it's interesting how the markets have adapted. You're seeing like the cage-free eggs everywhere. You're seeing the free-range chickens. The antibiotics are out of my chicken nuggets now. Super thankful for that. But it's kind of interesting. Sometimes the markets need that push.
Right. There's one other thing where it's an animal disposition bill, and we want to just keep intact civil procedures for dealing with neglectful or even worse animal owners. There are certain groups that want to collapse the civil into the criminal proceeding, and because there's a higher burden of proof in the criminal proceeding, it would make the prosecutors less inclined to prosecute, and therefore the animals would be the losers in that. So we just want to keep really the disposition process in place.
Whenever you say disposition...
So they have a hearing on whether the owner has been neglectful.
Okay.
Or, you know, worse, intentionally mistreating the animal, which is a 51% burden instead of beyond a reasonable doubt, which is 98% roughly.
I'll lot me on that pro bono with you if you want.
Okay. Thank you. Up on that.
Are we on to five questions?
We're on to five questions.
Okay, I have some good ones. Question one. So, you know, you've got great hair. What? How do you style it? How do you get this perfectly coiffed, you know, dream hair that every man in the capital is envious of?
That's
maybe fun. Some women, too.
I don't know. I dry it, and then I put dry shampoo in it.
Any special type of dry
yeah,
shampoo?
Yeah, I buy it just by whatever label looks coolest.
All those J school kids that are listening, this is who your target audience
that's
is.
That's right. So Dove has the cleanest looking label, and so I tend to go with Dove. But I'm open to competitors if they come out with a cooler one.
Interesting. I always go to TJ Maxx and buy like the cleanest looking one, but like clean in the sense of like tropics and like, oh, that probably smells really good.
So
and TJ Maxx does not like it whenever you like spritz the dry shampoo in store because it makes us look spot on the floor. I gotta know how things smell.
Yeah, this is the particular one I use has a very clean scent so that I don't smell like I'm just coming out of.
So to clarify, you put in dry shampoo. Just
I can't believe we're talking this much about my hair.
Almost you put in dry shampoo like second day hair.
Oh no, I put it whenever I get out of the. Because it just adds some, you know.
Yes, some texture. Some but grit. Then you still get that all natural. I'm a big fan. question two. Favorite breed of dog?
I have a golden doodle. Named Britain. It's actually named after John Britton, who gave me my break in lobbying. Well, he and Jennifer Durham. I want to make sure she gets full credit too. But
so do you have like a goldfish named after her or something?
I don't.
You need to get a second dog is what you need.
You're right. Absolutely.
Can we talk about Tonka too? Is that?
Oh
is that
yeah. Your... So totally. And then Brittany, my fiance, she has a beagle.
Is it like a beagle bulldog mix?
Yeah.
Okay, I need to see a picture of that. What's Beeble's name?
Oh, Tonka.
Tonka.
Yeah, he's a problem child. Like Britain is really easy peasy, and Tonka is less.
So I used to have two dogs, and it was fun. You know, I always say dogs. I imagine are just like children, right? Like that's exactly how they are. But their personalities were very different, and one was fussy, and the other was insane. And you know, it's like children. I imagine.
So they look like together Princess Diana, my dog, and Walter Matthau.
Okay, I need to see pictures. Couple. You have to post when you tweet this. We need to post a picture
they're,
of the dogs.
They're on Instagram.
That's what we need to do.
You can see.
So, question three. So, you're born and raised in Jeff City. Yes.
I was little known fact. I was born in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Okay.
But I was raised since the age of five or so.
Okay, the age of five. Okay. So where? So I only know Jeff City like High Street, like a couple blocks. What is a hidden gem restaurant or a hidden gem coffee place in Jeff City that you go that most people that didn't grow up here wouldn't know about?
Right. So I don't know that. I think most of the action in terms of coffee shops are downtown.
You just don't want to tell us where
Dunn
we can
Brothers.
Find you in
no,
the session,
actually,
right?
Dunn Brothers out west side near my parents'
Edgewood,
place
right?
on Edgewood. It's good.
Okay. We have a Dunn Brothers quality. In Columbia.
Yeah. So okay. I recommend that.
Dunn Brothers. Question four. What is your favorite thing you're watching on TV or Netflix right now?
I actually thought about that last time. I was like, oh, I wonder if the last one got TV.
Really?
Because I watch a lot of TV. Mindhunters. I'm listening to that or watching that on Netflix. They're like people in the FBI and they study serial killers and they try to figure out things. They interview the serial killers and then they figure out, you know, how can we detect this early in people before they. So I love like This Is Us.
Oh, it's so good.
It is so good.
I would read yes. Are you not?
So I don't get it. I don't like dramas. I don't like crying.
Me
so every
either.
Time there's a commercial on, they're like, they're ugly crying on TV.
No.
I don't want to see that.
Oh my god, it's really
I'm more
good.
Of like a Criminal Minds person. Like I want to see them solve really complicated
I'm with you on that, but like this Mandy Moore, you know, back in eighth grade, like who didn't love Mandy Moore? Now she's a mom. It's like we grew up with her. Now she's on TV and look at that. You know, this is good.
I have personal beef with this because Mandy Moore actually has a children's show on Disney Junior called Sheriff Callie's Wild West. And my baby's obsessed with it. And because of This Is Us, there's no new episodes, and I'm going to lose my mind if she doesn't suspend her time there. Like, maybe go on a hiatus, just go back to Disney, record some more shows. Because I've seen the same season 12 times now. And I know all the songs word for word, and it's not a good situation.
It's not a good situation.
Last one I mentioned, Ballers. I love
Thumbs
Ballers.
Thumbs down.
I knew that it wouldn't be. I mean, but I like all the cars.
It is like Entourage, but not as good.
It is The Rock.
It's not as good. I do love The Rock, but
I think The Rock's great.
I'm sure your demographic is like exactly what they're shooting for.
Absolutely.
It's like a young professional guy that fancies himself, you know.
So cliche. That's why I was like, do I mention it? Okay.
No, I'm so glad you did. Last question. I asked this to Wes Sutton, and he gave a terrible answer, and so I'm going to give you an opportunity to give me the answer that I want. What is your favorite food at Thanksgiving dinner?
Oh, so, you know, I'm one of the most neurotic people you'll ever meet.
Oh, no.
And
I think that's why we get along, Tom.
Right. And so, but this is a pretty boring because I don't eat sugar or starch-based foods. And so
bad too.
It's terrible on the other end. Like, I'm Wes, except the exact opposite.
Both bad eaters, but for different reasons.
For different reasons. So I would say I anticipate, I told Brittany I wanted her to make duck instead of turkey because it's just like a little bit different. But I'm looking for a duck with some aioli.
Some aioli.
That's not Thanksgiving.
Okay, so the next day I'm going to my parents and they'll have turkey. And, you know, I'm sure that I'll eat tons of that and green beans, but I don't...
So you... Okay.
That's all I eat is meat and cheese and vegetables. That's really it. Oh, nuts.
Wow.
That's terrible.
So this is the first year I'm hosting Thanksgiving ever, and it's, like, been my dream, like, forever. Like, I'm a huge decor magazine person, like, hosting, like, gotta be fancy, and, you know, just crushing myself under the weight of all these ridiculous standards that no one cares about except for myself. So, Tom, you can come to my house because we're going to do fancy foods. And Brandon's like, my husband, Brandon's, he's begging for green bean casserole. And I was like, honey, let's have a spine here. Like, let's have some dignity. We don't need to eat vegetables out of cans, really, ever.
Oh, my God. Disagree. Are you guys kidding me? This is upsetting. This is troubling.
I like rice cauliflower instead of mashed potatoes.
Oh, good Lord. No, step in. Becky, we're going to set this right. It's time to talk about the actual good foods.
Okay, so ranking in order. Top three. One, stuffing.
Stuffing.
Obviously.
Every
two,
time.
Two.
Gravy. Is it stovetop stuffing or?
You do it right.
I'm going to swear. Hell no, it's not stovetop stuffing. It's homemade stuffing. You cook it in the turkey and you put mild pork sausage in it. And there is nothing better in the entire world than that. And I will share the recipe. I will tweet the recipe out for this amazing stuffing.
What is stuffing?
I mean, it's bread, it's celery, it's mushrooms, it's a little bit of pork sausage, it's some egg, it's some onion.
That is the most metal thing ever, where you take a product from one animal and you stuff it inside of another and then cook them together.
I mean, last time I checked, we lived in Missouri. so if anybody wants the best stuffing recipe ever and wants to be a true Missourian, I'll tweet out this recipe. It's my grandpa's recipe. I'm sure like he didn't invent it, but we like to think that he did, you know?
Oh, yeah,
like,
of course.
Anyway.
So number one, stuffing.
Stuffing, then gravy. And then
turkey gravy, or do you make something
turkey
separate?
Gravy from the turkey drippings in the pan? Okay. I mean, again, come on. And then I would say the third thing, I'm gonna throw. I'm gonna say green bean casserole because I love turkey, but you eat turkey throughout the year. I like mashed potatoes, but you get it throughout the year, so it's not special.
See, I'm gonna go the other route there and say it is the turkey because I can get green bean casserole literally any time.
See, I can't. We must just have different access to
foods. Do you prefer green bean casserole with the canned green beans?
No, frozen.
Frozen green beans.
Frozen. And then you steam them. So fresh.
So that's what
frozen.
I'm going to do. And I'm very excited
about
it.
That's what you should do. Yeah, no cans.
I'm really upset.
I do have a few eating standards. And I won't eat foods out of cans, generally speaking.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. No spam.
No spam.
No Hawaiian Thanksgiving for you?
No. We do it. We are Missourians. Born and bred.
Hawaii loves their spam.
Okay. Yeah. I'm really excited for, I'm making these crescents. Like, I'm not a big bread person, just like naturally, which is kind of, I know. But I'm going to make these cranberry cream crescent puff things.
That sounds fun.
Very excited for them.
Yeah. And if you burn the turkey, then just more wine for everybody is what I always say.
Yeah. Well, so my dreams of this fancy Thanksgiving are like blown because Brandon just wants to watch football and like eat meat all day. And then no one that's coming to my Thanksgiving drinks wine. And so I have this
listeners, my house seems like the best spot to come visit this Thanksgiving.
So it's just going to be me drinking wine and eating this great turkey.
That's pretty legit.
I do have one last Thanksgiving question. So whenever you think turkey at Thanksgiving, do you think turkey breast, do you think turkey roast, or do you think like whole turkey?
Like what you're
what getting? What do you mean?
Whole turkey.
So I didn't know there were different options. You can get the whole turkey.
Yes.
And then if you go to like Schnucks, there's like the frozen ones and the not frozen ones, and there's like 20 different options. It's really overwhelming. And then you can just get the turkey breast, and then you can get that bone in, bone out, skin on, skin off, frozen, not frozen.
Whole turkey.
And then
whole
there's turkey roast, where they took all the meat and like compressed it into a loaf.
I'm gonna go hell no to that.
I'm gonna say
it's actually turkey. Really good, but that's more of like a Tuesday, like you don't know what to cook for dinner meal.
I like the neck, so
what?
It's like, oh,
see, that wasn't surprising to me based on the thing you just shared.
You know, says Clark saved the neck for me.
Oh, come on. Well, I don't watch movies, so.
Oh, it took me a while to get there, but I'm there now.
So do you, so let's back up for 2 seconds, and this is like after, they're probably going to like stop recording this podcast, so you still eat turkey, you still eat green bean casserole, but just generally speaking, you eat very healthy.
I do. I don't eat anything that contains the word casserole in it, because it sounds like I'll eat the green beans. Because
you're an uppity judger.
No, because I don't know what's contained in there. It sounds suspicious. And there's probably starch products.
So is that a lifestyle choice, or are you?
Yeah, strange? You know. Well, it makes me feel I am strange, as you say. But the story is, I was in eighth grade. I was playing a 3-on-3 basketball tournament, actually, with Representative Jay Barnes. He was one of my teammates. And I ate a funnel cake, and I felt terrible. And after that, I resolved I'm not eating junk food anymore.
In the third grade.
Eighth grade.
Oh.
You know, that makes sense.
Even in the eighth grade.
Like, a lot of people in general eat food that they know is going to make them not feel good, and it makes sense to maybe don't do that to yourself.
Right, like, you'll see people walk out of Mexican restaurants and like, oh, so I try to avoid that.
No, I'm always like,
I want to be that person. I want to be that person.
That is fascinating.
Well, I do want to wish you, everyone listening, a very happy Thanksgiving from the Missouri Times. Welcome to our first 44-minute podcast. We're going to change format a little bit in the beginning of the year. So we're practicing. Thank you for letting us practice on you, Tommy, and being a wonderful guest. And of course, thank you so much for tuning in to the hashtag Middle Edge podcast, sponsored by the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce. We will talk to you next week whenever I book a guest.